Hello, everyone. Welcome. Happy to be with you. As many of you know, this is kind of my original home sangha. It's the first sangha in this country that I started going to on a regular basis now, many years ago. And it's always particularly sweet for me to come back and teach here. It's the nourishment for my own practice early on. So, tonight, as was mentioned, I'm going to talk about the threefold way of cultivating awareness. And this is based on a sutta, a discourse in the connected discourses. Those of you who are on the geeky side, this big blue tome here. And in this particular teaching, they're often framed with like a little story. And this little story, a certain monk comes to the Buddha in a forest. Buddha is often staying in like forests or parks. And he asks the Buddha for the teachings of the Dharma in brief. Well, apparently the Buddha knows this monk, and he knows that the monk is prone to distraction, shall we say. It's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to give you the teachings in brief. Then you might just follow me around and not practice because this had happened before. The monk would take teachings and then just sort of wander about. And the monk says, no, I'm sincere. I really want, give me the teachings in brief. I promise I'll practice. I'll apply myself. So the Buddha then talks about basing the practice on developed virtue, developed ethics, and on view that is straight or view that is straightforward. And by that, he means an understanding that we are responsible for our own actions and that our actions have results, which might sound obvious, but in ancient India, there were a lot of different philosophies flying around and it wasn't necessarily obvious. And then he said, once you've got those two things, the foundation and virtue, ethics and straightforward view about personal responsibility for your actions, then you should develop awareness of the four foundations in a threefold way. And by this threefold way, he means focusing attention internally, externally, and internally and externally together. So, in other words, it's not just about these beautiful sits that we do, or for that matter, the challenging sits that we do that are within our body, within our mind. It's also about how we show up off the cushion in daily life, in relationship, and about the relationship between those two things, our actions and their results, and the way we respond. So, this is such an important threefold understanding that the Buddha basically talks about how, if developed, you can expect beautiful states of mind and heart to increase and keep increasing to the point of freedom. And it's also this internal, external, internal, and external kind of threefold valence is included in, I'm sure Eugene has talked about this over the years. In fact, I know he has, the four foundations of mindfulness, sort of the core teaching of this early tradition. It's included in that. Excuse me. There's this repeated teaching. It's called a refrain because it's repeated a number of times, which is basically, practitioner abides contemplating the body as a body internally, the body as a body externally, or contemplates abiding the body as a body both internally and externally. So that's the first foundation. And the Buddha goes on with every other foundation, body, feeling tones, mind states, and well, everything else to apply this lens. But it's not elaborated so much in that teaching. It's elaborated, one might say, in the rest of the teachings and in our lives, where the rubber meets the road, where our practice meets daily life. So I'm going to touch just a little bit into each foundation tonight and how this applies to it. This is not a comprehensive review of the four foundations of mindfulness. That would take too long and be very detailed. So in the mindfulness of the body realm, I'm just going to touch on body postures and situational awareness. So most of us are familiar with mindfulness of breathing. That's part of the mindfulness of the body foundation of awareness. There's also mindfulness of body postures that falls within this. So when you're sitting in meditation or lying or standing or walking, noticing that you're doing that, right? That's actually a key part of the teaching. So is taking note of your own body language and these indeterminate postures, like that moment of getting out of bed in the morning or sitting down between standing and sitting, being aware of those. One translator writes, she stand understands accordingly, however the body is disposed. So this includes all of the motion, all of the movement, and it's a signal, sometimes the first signal of internal emotion or attitude. If I notice I'm standing in a certain way, I might realize I'm tense or happy or connected. This becomes powerful when we start to apply this threefold way, because the invitation then is to notice the way other people are standing, walking, sitting, moving. We can notice where they are physically and then potentially infer, not assume, something about how they are. For example, if you are going to be meeting a friend at their home or at a cafe, what happens if you notice them sitting slumped when they're usually upright? What's going on? Or someone's hunched. Noticing and noticing the impact in your own body, your own heart from those shifts in posture. This all feeds into another teaching within the first foundation for awareness, which is satisampajana, full awareness, situational awareness, or clear comprehension, it's sometimes translated as. So this implies noticing one another's and noticing our own way of moving through the world. When moving towards, noticing we're moving towards. When reaching, noticing reaching. When grasping, noticing grasping. When moving away, when looking away, when looking towards, noticing all of that within awareness itself. These are also clues. Sometimes my best clue to my frame of mind during the COVID lockdown was noticing my hand on the refrigerator door, right? What's going on? Not hungry. Right? Noticing how the body is disposed in the moment. And this gets bigger because we start to recognize, is it my own embodied physical need, what the moment requests? Is it someone else's motion that we're noticing? What might they be needing? What might that be telling me about the situation? All of this applies to moving through life's situations. Mindfulness of context. That's Tanisiro Bhikkhu's translation. It helps to guide interactions with life so that it's more collaborative or a conversation with what is rather than an argument with reality or an agenda about reality. It's the interplay. How is this feeling within me when I see this? This feeds into another teaching the Buddha often gave, which is a wise person of great wisdom seeks to cultivate benefit for themselves, for others, for themselves and others, and for the world. The first step of wisdom is noticing what the situation is, right? Noticing what's happening. So the next foundation, mindfulness of feelings. Internal and external mindfulness of pleasant, unpleasant, and neither can be a really clarifying lens. Feelings in this particular structure of teachings, as many of you know, the Buddha's not talking about emotions here. He's talking about feeling tone. Vedana is the Pali. Veda means to know. And Vedana is the valence, the very subtle interpretation we give to the simplest sense experience or the simplest mental experience. Is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? Is it neither? And what's really powerful about that is so much of each person's experience is deeply informed by how pleasant or unpleasant we find it, often unconsciously, right? There's a power in noticing how much I move towards what's pleasant and how much I arrange my life around it. Or maybe a slightly different personality might arrange an entire life around avoiding unpleasant. Many of us do both. But noticing it, inquiring about it within ourselves, and maybe noticing and gently checking in with others about it, right? With humility, with tact. A simple example, can be at a restaurant or at a grocery store, a cashier. And that person just looks stressed out, completely stressed out. Well, sometimes it can be really powerful to go, like, wow, this feels kind of stressy. How are you doing? Right? Noticing, connecting. And the person can say, nah, I'm fine. But often it opens the door to a connection that dissolves a certain level of tension within ourselves and within others. And the power of this internal and external is that we can begin to really use the practice to tune in more deeply to our own body, our own felt sense. And connect in a more authentic way to whatever is happening or whoever's happening around us while checking in. That's the power of relational practice. There doesn't have to be a story or a projection. It can be checking in at the simplest of levels. So, what I'm getting at here is external mindfulness of anything happening in anyone else's interior world, feeling tone, thinking, mood. It's pretty much a subjective, our subjective impression of their feelings. Bhikkhu Bodhi writes about this. He talks about that in the commentaries, external contemplation is applied to noticing, for example, the breathing occurring in the body of someone else's body with uninterrupted attention, weaving back and forth between our own and theirs. And then with things like contemplation of feeling or mind objects, dhammas, inferring. For most of us, most of the time, mind reading tends to be a projection of hopes or fears onto another person or a situation. So it's critical to turn the lens back to the internal and notice perception, believing. Wow, is this so? Employing humility. and of checking in with someone else with tact, right? So, this threefold way of engaging with mindfulness of mind practice has that similar kind of valence to it. Mindfulness of mind in the Buddhist teachings refers to the quality or the attitude, the mood, atmospheric conditions, if you will, of our hearts and minds. It's more pervasive, maybe, than an emotional state, a transient emotion. And it can also include things like, am I contracted or distracted? Expansive or spacious? How is the mind in relationship with this moment? Is it concentrated? Is it clear? Is it fuzzy? There's no wrong answer. All minds do all of those things at certain times. Is it influenced by greed, hatred, or delusion? Is there a filter over my lens? Or is it influenced by clarity, wisdom, kindness? What's there? It's often helpful for me to know if I'm feeling, for example, clear or distracted before stepping into a new situation. So take a moment, even right now, just to check in with your state of your mind and heart. How is it in there? Whether it's internal or our perception of what's happening external or our recognition of the interplay, the relationship between the two, it's helpful to acknowledge that our interpretations of what's arising can be like doorways into entirely different subjective realities. A person's interpretation can change everything sometimes, right? We're picking up on things all the time. I've told this story here before, I think. It's the ancient story of a gatekeeper to a city-state, wealthy town in ancient India. And this gatekeeper is well regarded for their wisdom. So people moving to the town, people traveling to the town to do business, they all kind of check in with the gatekeeper. They got to stop anyway and check in, not for administrative reasons. And this particular day, a little group comes up to the gatekeeper and the head of the family asks, "Tell me, how are the people here?" And the gatekeeper rubs their chin and looks at the person and says, "How did you find them in the town that you left?" Oh, conniving. Couldn't trust them. Awful. Awful people. So glad we're gone. I think you'll find people a lot like that here. Few hours go by, another group comes up. Someone comes up to the gatekeeper, asks pretty much the same question. "So, what can we expect from the people here?" Well, you know what the gatekeeper says. "How were they in the last town that you lived?" "Oh, we had wonderful neighbors, kind, generous, could trust them with anything, really friendly. Feel so blessed. Sorry we had to leave, but you know, my spouse got this new job and here we are. And so let us know, how is it?" "I think you'll find people a lot like that here." So, of course, there are differences in culture, even microculture. But what this story is pointing to is so much of what we put out into the world, so much of how we show up informs how we're related to. Right? Leading with kindness, openness, connection has a completely different effect on strangers than leading with being rushed or dismissive. Right? within this third foundation, there's another distinction, which is between exalted and unexalted, shall we say, heart and mind. That's actually translation. And exalted sounds big, I guess it is. And it's a language that's often used to describe the four immeasurables: loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity. And I mention it because any of those, leading with showing up with any of those, tends to have a really powerful effect on our own lives and on the lives around us. And one of the single most important distinctions for me in relational work, or for a lot of people, if you're in contact with difficult situations, is to notice the mind and heart are experiencing in that moment. And if you're inclined to be helpful or involved, notice if it's empathy or if it's compassion. They're not the same thing. When compassion is present, there's this buffer of equanimity. I can care deeply, however, loving concern is the dominant experience. And when deeply empathizing, there still might be the loving concern. There's also these heavy, intense emotions flowing through, reactivity flowing through. Either can be appropriate. However, much of the time, it's much more sustainable to focus on the compassion, on the goodwill itself, even if there's a lot of caughtness. To focus on that can be nourishing, strengthening. Empathy can be beautiful. Compassion is exalted. So, to start to notice for yourself what filters or attitudes in the mind influence how you relate, how you relate. Okay, last foundation. Mindfulness of dharmas or dhammas. This includes all mental phenomena. Okay. Mind objects are sometimes called thoughts, views, conceptions, hindrances, perceptions, impulses of care, love, generosity, concentration itself, clarity itself. It's a big, big category. So that's a lot of internal practice. And if you're anything like me or most other humans I've ever met, we are often attributing those things to others, kind of all the time, right? And whether we're attributing or not, it often we pick up on others, the energy of others. One of my early teachers used to invite us, if we built a story about someone else's internal world and their internal dhammas, to simply ask the question, are you sure? Are you sure? How many stories are you sure about? Working as a chaplain really increased my own commitment to checking my perceptions with anyone I might be building a story about. And it again is one of the powers of relational practice, as opposed to solitary meditation or retreat. We can engage with the other and test out. Am I sure? Are they sure? Where are we at? In a tactful, kind way. But what I really want to emphasize in this area is there is a collective kind of aspect to these qualities of mind, whether they be the forces of greed, hatred, and delusion, or their opposites, peace, contentment, goodwill, generosity, clarity, wisdom. They don't just move through our minds, right? They move between us, they move through cultures. Through families, through societies, through workplaces. And they're often contagious. So, one beautiful example of this is the growth of the Buddha's Dharma over these millennia, right? That got passed down. In a sense, contagious. So it can be really helpful in a small kind of normal way to notice when people's generosity inspires others, to notice the little acts of kindness, of connection around you, whether it be those you're directly in contact with, or something you see from a distance, a story you hear. A story I know from a practitioner I know. She was on a first date. This was on the peninsula somewhere. And her date were walking themselves back to each other's cars. And it was dark. A man approached them in distress. "Where's the hospital? How can I get to the hospital? Can you point me the way?" And they point him in the very vague general direction. And he said, "My mother's there," and he just starts running. Well, the man and the woman part ways, and the woman was like, "That guy looked like he was really upset." So she got in her car and she followed him and picked him up by herself and drove him to the hospital. And it turned out this man was a deacon in his church. His mom was in crisis in the ER, and he'd taken public transit to get there, and he needed to get there quickly. And he couldn't stop thanking her. She really noticed the mind state of this person, knew this person wasn't a threat, and ended up forging this really lovely connection with this stranger just for a few minutes while helping him out. So I mention this because not that you have to pick up a stranger in your car and drive them to the hospital, but that little moment, it was maybe 10 minutes of time, made a consequential difference in that man's life and in hers. She shifted who she felt she was through doing that. So to stay mindful of mental states within yourselves and the states of those around you as they express them, then you can make a choice. What you pick up, what you respond to, and what you choose not to pick up. And that's internal and external mindfulness too. It helps us choose the kind of ripple effects that we want to have in our lives. The Buddha said practicing awareness in this threefold way promotes growth in wholesome, beautiful states of mind and heart. I would add it can promote them internally, externally, and both. And it can take you to the end of the trajectory to freedom. Thank you for your kind attention. So, thank you all for being here. For the sincerity of your practice, for the internal cultivation work that you're doing. It's not a small thing in today's world that a group of people get together to do this. It's something really beautiful. So please keep on keeping on. And I'd like to take a moment to dedicate the benefit of our practice to ourselves and to all of the lives we touch and all of the lives they touch, rippling outwards and outwards. May all beings be free from suffering. May all beings feel a joy of connection. And may all beings know the highest happiness of awakening. Thank you for your practice.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.